Let's lower our focus to our breath. Breathing in, breathing out. Breathing in, we fill our bodies all the way to the tip top of our head. And breathing out, we let the breath descend through our soles of our feet into Mother Earth. And with a deep in breath. Shanti. Shanti, Shanti. We engage our minds now. I was thinking, our church is called Unity. Why and what does that mean for us?
So for me, it reminds me of knowing that we're from one source, the universe, God, that we're simply spiritual brothers and sisters. And, the pain in one, I feel the pain in myself of that. And the happiness and joys is also shared too.
Our church is called Unity. Anyone else? What does that mean for you?
To me, it's everything. It's inclusivity. It's not segmenting. So many churches segment and create their own little place that's the right place. And I think ours is, you know, anything that's love is welcome here to me.
Unity.
I like how Reverend Russ said today, it's not about the right or wrong or the good or bad. It's including.
Mm-hmm.
Nature.
Any other thoughts on unity?
You know, I cannot give you a thought because it happened to me that this week while I was driving and I was thinking about the things that I'm doing here, I realized what unity means. What is it, the meaning of unity in unity? You know, we receive a lot of messages that unity is like what you said, mm-hmm. inclusivity, we are united. We are together, we are all that is, but what unity means in the new thought, you know, I don't have an answer for that. I'm looking for an answer as you just put the question out. And I'm looking for an answer because when I get someone giving an answer, I will think about it and then maybe
see if it lands.
To see if it is that for me means that, or I can take it that maybe I can break it down in such a way that amplify it or reduce it or leave it.
My next question is, does unity perhaps mean union?
Well, it means that. It means union. It means unity. We are united. We are inclusive. We are, but then again, for me, it has a little more, it has a little more deeper meaning than just the superficial that we know about.
With what are we united?
That could be. With what?
With what are we one?
With God.
We're going to look at the scriptures today for some guidance on this. I point out to you that union. We are Unity Church. We are Union Church. The word in Sanskrit for union is yoga. Union. Union. Union with the One, with the Self, capital S Self, union. In India, we could equally be called Yoga Church. Union. Yoga in the larger sense is union. And we already know, or I've heard it said, that the Tao that can be told is not the eternal Tao. The name that can be named is not the eternal name. The nameless is the eternally real. And it is to that nameless, which we can't name, that perhaps we wish to experience unity and union and no separation. We wish to experience union. We've heard about it, and we perhaps wish to experience so yoga or union. If I say with the divine, it sounds like I'm here and the divine's there, and I would like to walk over to it, reach out to it, experience it. I don't think that's the experience of it. The true experience of union, I'm guessing, is going to be nameless. Nameless. Some experience that I am not separate. I have separate thoughts in my mind. My mind deals in separation, you know, I, you, they, them. Thank you. I'm grateful for my mind. It works well in that manner. But the union, the unity, the yoga that I've heard about and perhaps to which I aspire comes as an experience from that other intelligence we talked about last week. Not the ego intelligence, but that other intelligence, a spring, like a spring box from the chest, is the best we can describe it. Today I heard Rav Russ talking about God, and he talked about the attributes of God being, well, we know what they are. And when I heard that, I heard the consciousness of me here and God out there. God is omnipresent, he doesn't born, he doesn't die, and then there's me, who died and was born, and then there's God out there. We're going to see in the spiritual tradition from the East, there's a deeper consciousness level. Sometimes we go through different consciousness levels as a ladder. There's a plateau up there, and we need a ladder to get there. What's the level, perhaps, to which we aspire? That experience of unity or union, where there's no separation. God is not out there and I'm here. Rather, there is only unity. Only unity, that's all I experience. I'm still experiencing everything I always experience, tables and my hunger and so on. And yet, that sits on top of this deeper experience I have of unity, or yoga, or union. And it is through what the ancient Indians called Atman, or translated as capital S self, that other intelligence that we need to nourish and look for and cultivate, so that when that other experience of union or unity, we get a glimpse of it, we say, oh, that's what it is. Oh, I want more of that. We prepare ourselves to have a glimpse of it, perhaps during the sound of Om that we make together, or other spiritual practices. We get some glimpse, and someone says, well, what was it like? It's, well, hard to explain, but there's something. And we continue on these spiritual practices so that we can have that experience more often. More often. So that we can aim to what the Bhagavad Gita talks about in the very beginning. The Bhagavad Gita doesn't waste a minute. It talks about what that state of union is like right from the get-go. And then later on they talk about steps to get there. So it puts us right in our face in the very beginning, this mysterious concept, perhaps, for us.
I have a visual that's just dropping in. And that unless you have some dark, you can't see the light. Because this is the way it works. And that God is everything. So I'm seeing, floating around in my mind, like a little square here, and it's a dark square, and there's a little light square over here, and it's a light square, and there's some gray squares and whatever. And they're all coming together, and they all have their own piece in this puzzle. And when they're all in this puzzle together, it creates balance with everything. So that was the unity visual I just got, because each one makes the other one work and makes everything else complete.
Who's to say that through grace we each travel the path that's given to us as we expand our consciousness? And that's a beautiful visualization. Beautiful visualization. I have read some of the spiritual masters say that in order to experience the height, you need to go through the depth. Dark night of the soul. People have reported this. I'm not sure that you have to, and people have reported that it's not an unusual path.
I just want to be clear. I heard you said, that's what I heard, that when we talked about God is all over here, okay, and then it's me, or then it's the inside of me, whatever. How should I change my way of expressing that to make it sound that there is a unity?
You are God.
You're God.
You can say these words. I am God.
I'm God. You are God.
I'm God.
That's right. You got it.
Yeah.
I am God. When I find myself laughing, I'm there.
Drop of water in the ocean.
Right.
Still don't get it done. I'm sorry. But
it's okay. These things are not meant to be God. They're meant to be felt. We hear the spiritual teachings, and we see the ones that attract us, and then we ponder them and see how they make sense for us in our particular path. All I was pointing out was, we talk about no separation, but at the same time we talk about I am here and
yes,
there's God.
Right.
To me, that's separation talk.
Right.
How can we train ourselves not to talk separation talk.
Right.
One of the ways we can train ourselves not to talk separation talk is never to be serious when we say I, you, he, she, it. We will use those words for the benefit of communicating in our ego intelligence. But in the other intelligence, we know it's a lie that there's an I, or an I consciousness, or a you. Rather, there is the universe of which everything is a perfect part of, and every aspect of the universe is exactly where it should be, exactly in a place, including you who are part of the universe. So you're not a you, you're just universe. So we experience ourselves as universe or God.
Sometimes it's hard to work through the blasphemy of that one, if that's in you.
Yes.
Same, I am God. I remember Shirley McLean did that, and the whole world went,
Yeah, I have. I don't have a problem with that. But you know what? I have a friend at one time, he wanted to know about unity, and I sent him a CD of one of the worship that I went to, that he was talking about what unity. But then he responded to me, and he was like, really, he's a deacon in the Catholic, and he wrote me an email that he was like, and the problem that I have with you guys is that you guys think that you are God. Well, I kind of answered, yes, I am God, but not in the sense you think about it, because, you know, God is in me. I said, God is in me, therefore I am. I am part of him, I am him, but not in the sense how he look at me. So for me to say something like that, I think it's what you just said, that blasphemy, you know, is in his core.
Yes, and we have to respect that.
Right, right. And I didn't touch the issue ever again when he responded again, because then it would be me, I say, you say, which one is the best of that? And I didn't get into that, but it's true.
All of the belief systems have their usefulness.
Right.
And I have seen people in the Catholic tradition, for example, which is full of ritual and particular ways one ought to think, be a great comfort and a great passageway to experiencing divine. And that works for people who are in that particular place on their spiritual path. We have many great Christian spiritual mystics that we study, all of whom were Catholic and
little boxes.
And what?
Little boxes. Each box is something.
Yeah.
It's something what you say.
And there are also levels. Like, you know, like take a really good Catholic. Okay, you've got this Catholic who's you're blasphemous because you're saying you're God, whatever. And then you get into like service, and then you get into something else, and then you get into this well that goes to the same river that it's all the same person, and they all have their own different levels and their little thought processes that go with it. That doesn't make the rest of it wrong or incorrect or anything. Just part of the whole.
In the Tao Te Ching, one of the verses is, when people lose their sense of awe, they turn to religion.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
That's
good.
True.
So good.
That's true.
Can you give us an example of that?
When people lose their sense of awe, when you have a sense of awe, you're experiencing unity, yoga, union. Just, you're out of your body. It's just awesome. When you lose that sense of awe and are desirous of it, where do you turn? You may turn to the rituals and the procedures and the way people tell you you ought to believe. You go to a Bible church, for example, where they say every word of the Bible is God's absolute truth. You're not allowed to dispute a single word of it. And perhaps that gives comfort to many, many people where they are on their spiritual path. And they would like to argue about it with you if you don't hold that same position. And they're anxious to draw you to their church because that idea is so fulfilling for them. They want everybody they know to come and experience the same thing they experience. And perhaps those who are in a state of awe or experience a state of awe can let the scriptures go. The scriptures are just steps on the ladder. When you arrive at the state of awe, as the Bhagavad Gita tells us, as useless as a well is to a village next to a river, when the rivers were pure and clean, so useless are the scriptures to one who has experienced unity, union, awe. Useless. Don't need them. And when we're on our stepping ladder trying to head towards that experience, the scriptures are useful. And as Satchitananda will point out, even if you've arrived at that place of awe, you don't want to abandon the scriptures, you want to leave them for others who are still on the path.
Well said, thank you.
The Bhagavad Gita now is going to talk about this deeper spirituality, this experience of union, the real and the unreal, the permanent and the impermanent. Ready?
Always ready.
Always ready. Satchitananda, a path for personal spiritual transformation. As
let me ask you something before you enter this, just to know. Did you read the Bible before you read this?
I've never read the Bible very much.
Isn't that interesting? Me either.
Me either.
But I'm willing to read this. It's funny.
Yeah.
I just wanted to know how you relate to one thing to the other.
For the most part, the Bible never captured my
attention.
My spiritual. There was so much in it about here's the right way to behave, here's the wrong way to behave, these are the consequences, you have to do this, you shouldn't do that. And it was only the teachings of Jesus, which are sprinkled around and sometimes not even presented accurately, that did speak to me. His Sermon on the Mount. Other of his teaching that spoke to me. And we studied this when we studied the Gospel according to Jesus this last year, focusing on what his teachings were. I picked up the Bible on numerous occasions and tried to read things, yet my mind often finds objections to it. This is an issue with my mind. I need to let go and look for the spiritual truths that are there. It's full of spiritual truths. That's a challenge for me.
I have that same issue. That's why it's not attractive to me.
And when I read these spiritual works, the Tao Te Ching, the Bhagavad Gita, I don't always understand all of it or I'm not in sync with it, but somehow it always attracts me, and that's why I stick with it.
Good.
So I invite you to join the journey. Here we go. All right, we're going to jump down to where we left off last week. Bhagavad Gita, chapter 2. We went over some verses from 7 through 13 last week, and I reviewed 14 through 19 quickly. We're going to go over them again and look at Satchitananda's commentary. The difference between the permanent and the impermanent, the real and the unreal. Difficult concepts for us. The permanent and the most of the things we sense are impermanent. We are impermanent. You weren't around 100 years and your body's not going to be here 100 years from now, except for me, of course. You're mortal. And people who are about 18 through 24, they're also mortal. That's why they recruit them as soldiers, because they can't die. Mm-hmm. Bless their hearts. Fearless. Immortal. Permanent and the is there such a thing as something that is permanent, that doesn't change?
Yeah.
So this is what we're going to be thinking about. Is there something permanent that doesn't change? These ancient seers spent a lot of time in deep meditation and found something which for them was permanent, different than the sense objects we experience in life. So they call that the unreal. And the real is that permanent thing. When you hear people in the spiritual tradition talking about the real and the unreal, it sounds kind of airy-fairy, like they're off in another world. For some of us. And the popular media, for example, when they portray the Hare Krishna groups, the real and the unreal, rather makes fun of it and belittles it as if these we are here and they are they. There's them and then there's us. They're a little off kilter, but we are the possessors of what's subtle. So we have to press through that cultural heritage of ours as well.
Now that you express it, you know how this thing, it looks like the permanent is unreal and the impermanent is real. I have it like this, permanent unreal and impermanent real. Because the way how you express, there's nothing permanent, so it's unreal. No, I mean, just...
You say there's nothing permanent.
But I say there is...
But some people have found out there is something permanent. Okay. And we're going to find out through the teachings how to experience that and differentiate between the impermanent and permanent.
Well, I look at it like this. Thinking of what you already taught me, it existed, it existed, and it will never cease to exist.
That's the permanent.
Mm-hmm. That's the permanent, but it looks unreal. But life is that.
It looks unreal to our ego mind.
To the ego mind.
Yes. And to another consciousness, it is the only reality, that which is permanent.
And then the ego
all of the impermanent stuff, in a way, is unreal. Are we willing to be open to that idea? What is permanent is the only really real thing. And all the impermanent things that we sense, in a way, are unreal because they change all the time.
And you know what is with the problem that I think that, I would say we, but the problem that we might have is that we always go to the this and not to the this.
Yes, we go to our heads for answers, and we need to train ourselves to go to that other intelligence. And that's part of why perhaps we're drawn to these studies, to learn, how do I get in touch, how do I stay in the presence of that other intelligence? My head is very useful. I'm very grateful I got it, but it's only useful in certain contexts. In other contexts, I need to go to my other intelligence. How to get a hold of that, how to experience that, how to experience the permanent and the real, which doesn't change. And the conduit is going to be through that other intelligence, the Atman, capital S self. And one of the techniques of getting in touch with that is our meditation practice. Our meditation practice. It's said that the seers who wrote the Bhagavad Gita were in deep meditation or extended periods, and these truths came to them. And through grace, they wrote the scriptures so that they might share these teachings with others. And yet the scriptures are like a well to a village next to a river. Don't really need them. Once we find out how to get in touch with that sense of awe, so we'll look at some techniques. We'll look at some things to think about to help our minds deal with it, as well as some practices. So today we're going to look at some things to think about. This is for our mind to deal with it. And then later on we'll look at some practices. One of the key practices, look ahead, one of the verses of the Bhagavad Gita is, you have a right to your actions, whatever you do, but never to your actions fruit.
Never?
Never to your actions fruit. You have a right to your actions, never to your actions fruit. Act for the actions' sake, and do not be attached to inaction. Self-possessed, resolute, act with no thought of results.
So it's like giving a gift, not expecting a gift.
With no thought of results. Open to success or failure. This equanimity is unity, union yoga. One of the steps that we can do on the path to experiencing awe is to give up expecting results. Not that we don't plan for results, that's part of planning in the moment, but that in the moment we act, we give up results. We are not upset when things don't turn out the way we hoped or expected. Most importantly, we're not jubilant or excited when things turn out the way we accepted. That's the same as being upset. Rather, we have turned it over to awe and God. And whatever happens is God's will, not our will. This is a step that we can consciously practice in all aspects of our life.
Practice.
As we do things. Yeah.
Practice being the key word.
And the way we practice is we notice that we did something and things aren't working out the way we hoped. And then we remember the scripture that it's not ours to be attached to those results. In every moment, can we give it to the universe, to God? So that's a practice. You've learned two practices today. One is meditation. The other practice is always giving the result to God. You have a right to your actions, but never to your actions fruit. These teachings are everywhere. If you've looked at the four agreements, for example, don't make assumptions is the same teaching.
Paul's advice to us always, over and over again, is let go and allow.
That's right. Let go, let God.
Allow what's now to be okay and to be perfect.
And also allow. His is mostly is allow. Whatever is supposed to come through, to come through.
Yes.
And whatever's supposed to happen, to happen. Which is another way of saying.
I'm a great exactly state of curiosity. Wow, I've done this.
Yeah.
I wonder if I'm going to get what I expect. I wonder if it's going to be totally different. And just be the observer of what happens. And in that observation, we maintain a deep peace, which is the path to experiencing awe. The more we can keep our peace and not experience upsets or the enthusiasm, but rather stay in that peaceful place, that is another technique for opening ourselves to the presence of awe.
Thank you. That's a hard one.
Yeah. Well, you got it.
If it were easy, it wouldn't be for you.
I mean, in order to be human, you have to have those things in you.
Human beings have many things in them, including our expectations, and we get that through our inherited instinctual nature. It's part of our instinctual nature. I train my cat. Whenever I go down there with my cat and shake the bottle of medicine, which she doesn't like, she knows what's going to happen. She goes and hides. I go get her anyway and give her the medicine. She doesn't like it. And then she gets her food and she's happy. She has these expectations. They're somehow instinctual within there. And we are like that as well. We learn to expect certain things. And there is another aspect of ourself, in addition to our instinctual, what you call human nature, and that is what some call our divine nature. And by learning these spiritual practices, meditation, giving up expectations, we can grow and flower more our divine nature, so that things won't change in our life necessarily, but we'll experience it from a new foundation of relief and peace. That's the teaching. Ready? It's almost time to close.
That was the best service. This is wonderful.
I mean, we received a whole lot today.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
It was much more deeper.
Yeah.
I have this desire to get through my lesson. Should I give it up?
Is that your actions fruit?
That's right.
This is my actions fruit. I prepared this and I wanted you to get it. That's my actions fruit.
When you go through your lessons, you have not thought what you have to. Today, you have gone, given us what we need to have.
Yes.
Instead of the lesson.
Yeah. Yes.
And that has been a lesson.
Yes. And the beautiful question that you started with. Yes.
I mean, you put us in the mood with that question.
Yeah.
That
so,
is huge.
You know?
Yeah.
If you put us in the mood of thinking mood, it's going to happen.
Right.
But well, at least we understand this one now.
Yes.
Better than showing it to me.
That's right.
I mean, I could take a...
Maybe we'll do a couple scriptures. Okay. Anyway. Let's go over, like we did last week, the scriptures, but we won't discuss the commentary.
Okay, go for it.
Because our time is up. And you can see if any of these scriptures have any new meaning for you based on what we've talked about today.
And then we can come back next week with it.
Come back next week?
Okay.
Just keep on going. Ready? Here we go.
Yeah.
Okay. 14. As the senses contact the objects of the senses, feelings of heat and cold, pain and pleasure occur. Prince Arjuna. Who's feeling pretty dejected and needs to see a psychotherapist for feelings of depression. These sensations come and go. They're impermanent. Patiently endure them, great prince. Reverend Russ talked about patience today, didn't he? Patiently endure the impermanent sense feelings. It's hot, too cold. This hurts. This tastes good. Endure all of those. They come and go. They're impermanent. Patiently endure them, great prince. In fact, that person who is not tossed about by sense experiences and can always stay balanced in pain and pleasure is fit to experience immortality. That person who is not tossed about by sense experiences and always stays balanced in pain and pleasure, in peace, is fit to experience awe. We can prepare ourselves to experience awe by not being attached to our sensory. We have our sensory experiences. That hurts, tastes good. Can we step back from our own experiences and just experience them? 16. What is not has never been. And what is always is. This truth about the real and the unreal has been realized by the seers. The seers saw what is not, realized it's never been, and what is always is, this thing that we're seeking to experience, this permanent, has been realized by the seers who wrote these verses, 17. Know that all this vast universe is pervaded by that which is indestructible. This is a mental leap. All the things we see in the universe, including stars and supernova and our bodies and things on Earth, our atmosphere, our oceans, changes and is somehow destructible. Know that all this vast universe is pervaded by that which is indestructible. No one can destroy what is everlasting and imperishable. This is a sales pitch, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Saying, look, there is this thing. Telling you about it. It's everlasting and imperishable.
I haven't been to the service yet.
No.
Well, let's do an omen and we'll close. So we can all go to the service. Keep my commitment to close more or less. Taking three conscious breaths. And a deep in breath. Shanti, shanti, shanti. Now, for all those with the desire to attend the service, we can attend the service.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Steve.
God bless you.
Okay.
God bless. And thank you for helping me not get stuck with my desire. Have a great week,
Roberto. Okay, all right, you too.
Good to see you.